Genesis chapter 41. I referenced last week that it seems like that some trials or seasons of trials never end. I think that all of us can expect some bad news in life, but you can also expect that there will be a time that bad news will not always last. It won't always be forever. It's like the tattoo on the girl's arm at Waffle House. This too shall pass, okay? And we expect that. You may go through a season of trials, but we just know that there will come a time it will eventually turn around for us. However, there are some folks who it seems like has nothing but hardships all of their life. And for whatever reason, God in His wisdom has just designed suffering in their life, and it seems like that it never ends. If you were reading the life of Joseph for the first time, by the time that you get to chapter 41, you might begin to wonder if Joseph is not one of those men for whom it is not going to turn around. Because so far, it has just been a tale of woe. In fact, from a human perspective, so far, there has not been one positive thing happen in his life. Even the favor of his father in that coat of many colors that you could say was a positive, but that even was turned against him because it stirred up the envy and the jealousy of his brothers. So from a purely human perspective, just from a human perspective, there has not been a single day in this story so far that has brought good news. Not on the day that he was thrown into the pit. Not on the day that he was sold to the Ishmaelites. Not on the day that he was sold to Potiphar. And not on the day that he was framed by Potiphar's wife. Not on the day that he was thrown into prison. Not on the day that the butler betrayed him. So far, I haven't found a good day yet. I expect that there to be some exaltation, but not yet. And I've known people who live like that. It is just one trial after another after another. But in chapter 41, things do turn around for Joseph, and they do so very dramatically. Because after languishing in prison for 2 years, he's called from the prison cell to stand before Pharaoh to interpret another dream. And within days, in fact, maybe within 24 hours, we don't know, Joseph goes from sitting in a prison cell to sitting on the throne, second in charge of all of Egypt. And it would be hard to find a more dramatic tale of rags to riches, more dramatic than what happened with Joseph. And Joseph could have imagined that one day I'll get out of prison, but he never could have imagined the promotion that God was going to bring to him. Not getting out like this and not to this position. And when he is finally exalted, he is exalted to such a high place that it makes all of those sufferings and hardships insignificant in comparison to where God has now placed him. I'll not spend any time on this. You could study this out on your own. Joseph actually becomes, I know he's a type of Christ, but he also becomes a picture of Israel. The experiences and the sufferings and the hardships of Israel. But one day Israel will be elevated and it'll make those sufferings pale in comparison. When you look at the story of Joseph and how God exalts him, here's the question that comes to my mind first and foremost is why? Why would God allow Joseph to experience all of these years of abuse if he's going to exalt him anyway? If God knew all along where he was going to place Joseph, was it really necessary to go the route of betrayal and servitude and imprisonment? I think about 1 Samuel 1, the story of Hannah. God gives Hannah a man-child named Samuel, but she has to go through all of that abuse and scorn and barrenness first. If God knew ahead of time that he was going to give her a son, then why make her go through the scorn of Peninnah and the barrenness and all of that? And is it really necessary to go through everything that we've talked about so far in chapter 37 through 40 in order to get to chapter 41? And we often ask the same question in our own lives. Why is the suffering? Why are the hardships necessary if he's going to exalt you anyway? When I look at it, I think that there are two reasons that stand out to me. And the first is that God was using Joseph to bring about salvation to his brothers. Now you think about this. God is going to place Joseph in a position not just for his exaltation, but he is going to be in a place where he can help his brothers and his father when that famine comes. And his exaltation, and this is important, his exaltation is not just a reward for making it through the period of suffering. No, it is to enable him to provide a refuge for his family when those 7 years of famine come. Joseph is going to be the savior of the very men who got the ball rolling and put him here. And in this, he becomes a type of Jesus Christ. In this, we see Jesus suffering at the hands of wicked men, even his own Jewish brethren, so that he could be their Savior. He suffered at their hands so that he could provide them their salvation. And that's exactly what happens with Joseph. The road that God places you on may be to somebody else's good. And when God exalts you, it may not be to pump your pride up. It may not even be to put you on an easy street of life. But God puts his children through the crucible of the fire to purify us and to shape us and to place us in a position that is best suited for his purpose and his glory. And that's important because when God does exalt you, then you must remember that it is so that you can be a vessel of mercy in his hand to somebody else. There's a second reason for the road that God brought him to get him to chapter 41, and it is this, is it gives us a pattern of how God exalts his children. It is not an isolated story of one man's journey. This is the journey that God brings every man on when he exalts him. Now, there are some men who have scratched and clawed and climbed their way by hook and crook to exalt themselves. That is not the way that God exalts a man. Before God exalts a man, he shapes him and he molds him into the kind of man that is worthy of exaltation and who can handle exaltation. And the waiting years of Joseph are not wasted years. Because God was as much at work in Joseph's life in the prison cell as he will be when he comes out to sit on a throne. So Genesis 41 is about the exaltation of Joseph. Now, I've looked at the chapter 7 different ways, and I notice that it has 57 verses. I have never in my lifetime preached through 57 verses in one sitting. But I am determined that tonight I will. You're not in a hurry, are you? When I look at chapter 41, though, and I look at this exaltation, there are really two thoughts that come to my mind. And I want to give you two principles tonight about how God exalts his children. Just two. And the first is this. And this is a word that scares Baptists. And I don't want you to be scared of the word. But exaltation is by the sovereign choice of God. Look if you would in verse number 1. It came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh dreamed, and behold, he stood by the river. Behold, there came up out of the river 7 well-favored kine, kine is cattle, and fat fleshed, and they fed in a meadow. And behold, 7 other kine came up, and after them out of the river, ill-favored and lean-fleshed, and stood by the other kine upon the brink of the river. And the ill-favored and lean-fleshed kine did eat up the 7 well-favored and fat kine, so Pharaoh awoke. And he slept and dreamed the second time. And behold, 7 ears of corn came up upon one stalk, rank and good. And behold, 7 thin ears and blasted with the east wind sprang up after them. And the 7 thin ears devoured the 7 rank and full ears. And Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. So the story opens up with Pharaoh having 2 dreams in one night. And by this time, we're familiar with the motive of dreams and the story of Joseph. They always come in pairs, by the way. Chapter 37, Joseph has two dreams, one about sheaves and one about stars. In chapter 40, there are two more dreams, one by a butler and one by a baker. So Pharaoh has a dream. It startles him. He wakes up. He goes back to sleep. He has another dream. It wakes him. And these dreams trouble him. Because so far in every dream, the dream has been prophetic. It has foretold some kind of event. And so we expect these dreams will do the same. Now, when I read the dreams, to be honest with you, they're a little bit weird. I don't have dreams. I never dream that I know of. And some people just have weird dreams. But these are weird dreams. So the first dream that you have is you have seven fat, well-fed cattle that are feeding in a meadow, and seven lean, scraggly-looking, diseased-looking cattle come out of the Nile River and eat the seven fat cattle. Then you have a stalk of corn, fat, full, ripe corn, just ready for the picking. And then here comes seven lean ears of corn, and they're not fully developed, and they devour the seven full ears. Now, to be honest with you, I think that's backwards. I would expect the fat cows to eat the skinny cows. I would expect the full ears to devour the skinny ears. But that's not the way that it happened. And it's weird enough for Pharaoh to understand that something is going on here. So here's what he does. He immediately calls all of his wise men to come and interpret the dream. That is in verse number 8. It came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled. He sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men thereof. And Pharaoh told them his dream, but there was none that could interpret them unto Pharaoh. These wise men are astrologer types. They're soothsayers who are involved in the cult. And so Pharaoh has a dream that's put there by God. And he's going to use satanic methods to try to interpret the dream. Now here's what I want you to recognize. Is that weird dream is part of a plan of God to get Joseph out of prison. Who do you think put those dreams in Pharaoh's mind as he slept? I'll tell you who did. God did. And when he calls for the wise men, and the wise men can't even take a stab at it, they have no idea what it means. Who do you think closed their minds to that? God did. And then the butler realizes, oh, by the way, there is this Hebrew I remember that did interpret dreams. Who do you think put it back into the butler's mind to remember Joseph? I'll tell you who did. God did. And when Joseph stands before Pharaoh and says, here's the interpretation, who do you think gave him the interpretation? I tell you who it was. It was God. And when Pharaoh said, we're going to exalt you to this high position, second of man, who do you think influenced Pharaoh to do it? I tell you who did. It's God. So I say to you that none of this story is by accident. It's not just the way that it happened. Everything in the story traces back to the hand of God. And I think that sometimes we're scared of the sovereignty of God because does that mean I'm a Calvinist or am I getting over into Reformed theology or am I a fatalist? A sovereignty is a Bible doctrine. And you can adopt a fatalist view. Well, God is just sovereign, so what's going to be is going to be, and there's nothing you can do about it. Or you can adopt a trust view. God is in control, and I trust him. It's God working here. You could say that Joseph's fate is in Pharaoh's hand. That's not true. It's not up to Pharaoh whether Joseph is promoted or not. It's up to God. And we're not reading about the chance plan of a pagan king. We're reading about the sovereign plan of a God that's put into action. Listen to Proverbs 21 and verse 1. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord as the rivers of water. He turneth it whithersoever he will. Now I got to be honest with you. That's a comforting verse to me in an election year. It really is. We are watching the most consequential presidential election in my lifetime, all right? I really think that it's make or break for this country. Can you imagine? And I don't turn church into a political rally. I don't mean that. We pray for good leaders. We really do. And I make no bones about it. I don't want Biden to get elected. But even a bad leader is in the hand of God. God can influence good men and bad men to make decisions that support his purposes. And even if the man that I don't support gets into office, it does nothing to thwart God's plan. The heart of the king is in God's hand. Joseph's promotion, it comes from God, not from Pharaoh. Listen to Psalm 75 and verse 6. For promotion cometh neither from the east, nor from the west, nor from the south, but God is the judge. He putteth down one and setteth up another. It's not Pharaoh that exalts Joseph. It is God that exalts him. I doubt that Joseph tried to do any scheming behind the scenes, but it wouldn't have worked anyway. And you can go through life and you can try to manipulate man and circumstances and even try to manipulate God to get in a better position. I tell you, it's better just to trust your station in life to God and trust him in his will and his purpose and his timing. One of the ways that I see the sovereign hand of God in this scene is the magicians that Pharaoh calls in to interpret the dream. And again, in verse number 8, the last part of it, there was none that could interpret them unto Pharaoh. Now, I had the advantage of hindsight. I've read the interpretation, okay? So it's a little bit unfair. But even without the advantage of hindsight, I got to be honest with you, the dreams don't seem too complicated. 7 fat cattle devoured by 7 skinny cattle. So I wonder if that has anything to do with food. 7 full ears of corn devoured by 7 lean ears of corn. I wonder if that has anything to do with food. I wonder if the 7 and the 7 and the 7 and the 7. I wonder if the 7 means anything. I'm just being honest. If you were a professional dream interpreter, which these guys are, this doesn't seem to be the toughest riddle. But they don't even make a stab at it. They don't even try. They just, we don't know. And I believe it is God that caused their minds to go blank, because if they interpret the dream, Joseph doesn't get a shot at it. And so God's not going to allow these magicians to have an answer. Then you got a butler who for 2 years hasn't had a thought about Joseph. Now out of the blue, he says, oh yeah, by the way, there is this Hebrew servant down there that did interpret my dreams. Where did that come from? How did you all of a sudden remember Joseph? I'll tell you how. It's God. And may we trust God to exalt us in due season and in the places where he can use us best. I don't want to be jealous of somebody else's opportunity or envious when God exalts somebody else. I want to bloom where I'm planted, and I want to serve where I've been placed. And God does bring about exaltation, but trust him to know when and where and how and why. His exaltation is by the sovereign choice of God. Well, that's half the chapter. There's a second thought that I give this to you. And that is that his exaltation is by the supreme character of Joseph. Though his exaltation is sovereign, it's not arbitrary. God can promote whomever he chooses, but he doesn't choose to promote those who have not proven themselves first. You'll see that in verse 14. The Pharaoh sent and called Joseph. They brought him hastily out of the dungeon. And he shaved himself and changed his raiment and came in unto Pharaoh. I have actually heard verse 14 used to preach against having beards. And I'm looking to see who has a beard. I got a beard here. And who else has got a beard? We got a beard. And I've actually heard. And here's the way that I've heard it preached. He's going to stand before the king, and you should always shave before you go in the presence of the king. So when you go to church, you always shave. I don't really think that's what it's talking about. I just think it says he cleaned himself up before he went into Pharaoh. He made himself presentable. Anyway, verse 15. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I knew you'd get a blessing out of something. Verse 15. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. And I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answers, saying, it is not in me. God should give Pharaoh an answer of peace. We've heard so much about the character of Joseph because he was such a good man. His character really comes out in this part of the story. Now, here's the thing about it. He's called to stand before Pharaoh, and Pharaoh needs his help. And it's important to me in the story that when Pharaoh asks Joseph for help, he doesn't promise him anything. You interpret this dream, he'll give you half my kingdom, give you a pot of gold, give you my daughter, son. He doesn't promise anything. There is no interpret my dreams and I'll pardon you. No, he is called to help. And at this point, there is nothing promised in return. And that's where Joseph is really, really going to shine. I have found people that quit serving the Lord really for several reasons. One, when they've experienced poor results from past service. I have interpreted dreams before, and it got me nowhere. Why should I interpret more dreams for more people? Look what it's done for me now. Huh? God hadn't blessed that in my life. I've seen others quit when they were mistreated in some previous service. I got hurt and abused. I'll never put myself in that position again. I trusted people one time. You'll never catch me doing that again. Huh? Oh, I know people like that. The last time I interpreted dreams for somebody, he forgot me. He betrayed me. Why would I go through that again with Pharaoh? But prison has not hardened Joseph. And you will watch him come out of prison with the same character that he had when he went into prison. And if he had grown angry at God and bitter at God and resentful at man, God could not have used him. How are you going to be an ambassador of God if your heart is not right and you are bitter against man and your character is not intact? We see his character, and there's two ways. First, I think about the humility of Joseph. Look at verse 16. Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God should give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Now, just think about this for just a minute. Joseph is in prison. Pharaoh calls for him. He gets ready. He comes. He stands before the king. He's standing there in that court. Pharaoh tells him that I have a dream, and I've heard that you can interpret dreams. Now, Joseph has to know that if I get this right, this could go well for me. This is my shot. So this is what Joseph could have said. Pharaoh, I'm actually the best in the country. You have called the right man because I am definitely the man for your job. In fact, as of right now, I am 4 for 4. I have a perfect track record. Your wise men couldn't help you. What's wrong with them? You got the wrong man. You could have saved yourself a whole lot of trouble if you would have just called me for... He didn't do that. He said, it is not in me. Even with his life potentially on the line, he doesn't try to exalt himself. And humility is the greatest of character traits, because without humility, everything else is just self-serving. You can be the most talented and the most gifted and the most eloquent interpreter in the nation, but without humility, God cannot use you. Do you want the exaltation of God? Humble yourself. I've even got Bible for it. 1 Peter 5 and verse 6, humble yourselves therefore under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. James 4 and verse 10, humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. Luke 14 and verse 11, for whosoever exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. Matthew 23 and verse 12, whosoever shall exalt himself shall be abased, and he that shall humble himself shall be exalted. It is by humble service that God exalts Joseph. And I call it the supreme character trait, because nothing is more supreme than just to be a servant. And it's interesting to me when you read through Joseph's interpretation, how many times he keeps pointing back to God. Look at verse number 25. Joseph said unto Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. God has showed to Pharaoh what he's about to do. Look at verse number 28. Verse number 28, this is a thing which I have spoken unto Pharaoh. What God is about to do, he showeth unto Pharaoh. Look at verse number 32. And for that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice, it is because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. I'm telling you, there is no self-promotion in this man. And if you want God to promote you, then learn to follow and learn to serve and learn to be abased. Humility of Joseph. Look, if you would, in verse number 33. And I just find this fascinating. When he gets done interpreting the dreams, he gives some counsel to Pharaoh. In verse 33, he says, "Now therefore let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land, and take up the fifth part, 20% of the land of Egypt in the seven plenteous years. Let them gather all the food of those good years that come and lay up corn under the hand of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities, and that food should be for store in the land against the 7 years of famine which should be in the land of Egypt, that the land perish not through the famine." And the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and the eyes of all the servants. Now watch this. "And Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this, a man in whom the Spirit of God is?" So here's what he says. He says, "Pharaoh, what you ought to do is for these next 7 years of plenty, you ought to find a man who can oversee the agricultural department of the land and can oversee this and can store grain and set aside 20% of everything that comes in. And then you've got food stored up for the 7 lean years. And then Pharaoh and his men, they start talking amongst them, "Oh, that's a good plan. That's a wise idea." Well, who could we find? I wonder if we have a Steve Mnuchin or Wilbur Ross. I don't know. I wonder if we've got somebody that could really, because this is really important. And Joseph is standing over there. And Joseph is not saying, "Hey, about me. Huh? Would you like to see my resume?" No. I'm telling you, there is no self-promotion in him. And in his humility, God exalts a Hebrew servant. A Hebrew servant to be in charge of the agriculture of Egypt, and places him over all of Egypt, only under Pharaoh. And it's amazing to me. Look at verse 39. "Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God has shown thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. Pharaoh said unto Joseph, see, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it upon Joseph's hand and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen and put a gold chain about his neck, and he made him to ride in the second chariot which he had. And they cried before him, bow the knee, and he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without thee shall no man lift up his hand or foot in all the..." Do you see where God has brought him from? Well, I want to remind you, yesterday he was in prison. And today, they are literally bowing the knee as Joseph rides by. Pharaoh recognized God has given him wisdom, and just like that, he goes from the prison to the palace. The humility of Joseph. Here's the second character trait that I would give you, and I'll be done. That's the faithfulness of Joseph. Look, if you would, at verse 46. Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. He came to Egypt when he was 17. He's now 30, meaning he's been there for 13 years. He's promoted to agricultural secretary. He is made second in command only to Pharaoh for the next 7 years. Joseph is going to work to store up this grain and get ready for these 7 years of famine. And he gathers 20% of the harvest that comes in. And if you read the story more closely, he builds storehouses in every city. So the fields around the cities, he got this grand plan. And the Lord blessed it so much that in verse 47 through 49, well, in verse number 49, it became without number. Joseph gathered corn as the sand of the sea very much until he left numbering. It was without number. You just finally couldn't count it. God has really blessed him. And if you read between the lines just a little bit, what you see is a very diligent man. Yes. And every task that Joseph has been assigned, he does it like it is the most important job in the world. Do you remember his first task? hey, Joseph, I want you to go and I want you to find your brethren and I want you to take them these supplies. And he goes all the way to Dothan and does it like it's the most important job that you could have. Do you remember his second task? He's serving Potiphar in his house. And he does it like it's the most important job in the world. And we glossed over this, but in the last chapter, his third job was to be the servant of the captain of the guard in the prison. And now his fourth task is finally one that is worthy of his skill. But he would not have been given this task if he had not been faithful in every task. Everything that he was given to do, he did it faithfully. And the road to exaltation is to be faithful in the little things of life. Luke chapter 16 talks about he that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also and that is as much. Don't expect God to give you more responsibility if you're not already faithful in what he has given you. It's not to the talented. It's not the gifted. It's not the eloquent. It is to the faithful. That's why no matter what you are called to do, do your best. If you're teaching a class of five or you're preaching to a crowd of 500, if you're sweeping the floor or keeping the nursery or preaching an evangelistic meeting, faithfully serve God where he places you and give it your all. There's one final thought when I think about his faithfulness, and it's found in verse number 50. It says, unto Joseph were born two sons before the years of famine came, which Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, priest of On, bare unto him. And Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God said, he hath made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. The name of the second called Ephraim, but God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. Joseph is given a wife back in verse number 45. An Egyptian wife, they have two sons. These verses really almost seem like an interruption, and here's the reason why. Because verse number 48 is talking about him gathering corn. Verse 53 takes you back to the story of the 7 years of plenteous. So really verse 50, 51, and verse 52 really has nothing to do with the story of chapter 41. It's almost like Moses when he wrote this, he just dropped it in there. It's an interruption. And why is that there? I believe it's there to reveal something about his relationship to God. He names these two boys, and it's important, he gives them Hebrew names. Not Egyptian names. Now you have to remember, he's been immersed in Egyptian culture for 13 years. He's had to adapt to Egyptian culture, so he's wearing an Egyptian dress and eating an Egyptian diet. He is Egyptian in every way except in his heart. He is still Hebrew at heart. He has the first son, Manasseh. Manasseh means forgetting. And it doesn't mean that I forgot about my family back in Canaan. No, it means that the hurts are not kept foremost in my mind. God has healed my wounds. He has the second son. His name is Ephraim. And Ephraim means fruitfulness. God has blessed him. Yes, the past has been difficult. Yes, the sufferings have been real. But still, faithful God. No bitterness in his heart. The past is not going to rob me of a future. And we've all had people that betrayed us and done us wrong. But the greatest gift is to be able to forgive them. And God made him fruitful in the land of affliction. Still faithful to God. And I hope that that helps us tonight. That when God exalts you, it'll be by sovereign choice. You don't scratch and claw and try to make. No, you let God handle that. And it will be by supreme character. So let us learn to serve God where he's placed us and remain faithful in whatever affliction that we encounter. You do the humbling and let God do the exalting. In his time, according to his purpose, for his glory. I know a lot of people in the ministry, and sadly I know a lot of men in the ministry. There is so much self-promotion. I think that social media has been the bane of Christianity in these last years. And I tell you how great I am and what a wonderful sermon I preached in. But I tell you, when God exalts you, nobody looks at you. They just look at God. That ought to be the desire of our life anyway.